Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 29th. City Council okays drainage fee hike, ranging from $20.88 to $59.16 annually for residential customers. It takes effect February 1st. The story was written by Luke Diaz. The Midland City Council gave final approval for the Title 11 ordinance for drainage fees ahead of its enactment. To alleviate further consternation about the fee hike, the city's engineering services director, Gabe McClellan, gave a presentation to help clear up misunderstandings and emphasize the necessity of the fees. The city of Midland instated a drainage fee in 2018, over two decades after a master drainage plan was created. Since the fee's inception, of the $73 million in 2007 dollars worth of projects, the city has only completed $17.3 million of that amount, McClellan said. In the meantime, the city's drainage system has begun to experience deterioration beyond repair as a consequence of neglect. The projects that were completed as a result of the drainage fees are as follows: Midland Draw, from Golf Course Road to Business 20, Phase 1 of Jowl Draw expansion, storm drain replacement at various roads, valley gutters, pumps, culvert maintenance, roadway design, Wadley Avenue and Golf Course Road, acquisition of land, wood drive improvements, emergency repair, Midkiff Road and Golf Course Road, Idlewild and Widewood Basin project. This leaves the city with an estimated $60 million worth of projects, which McClellan and his staff have broken down as follows: Wadley improvements, $12 million. Golf Course Road improvements, $8.7 million. Midkiff Road improvements, $1.2 million. Phase 2 of Jowl Draw expansion, $2 million. Midland Draw improvements, $10 million. Ventura and Tumbleweed Park, $2.4 million. A Street, from Harvard to Scarborough, $1.65 million. Neely and Humble improvements, $1.8 million. Terrell improvements, $2.25 million. B Street improvements, $500,000. Evening Star Crossing, $4 million. Wadley and Avalon and Thomason, $13.5 million. On top of all that, the city is also looking to develop an additional $75 million worth of future improvements, which themselves can be categorized as follows: Phase 3 of Jowl Draw expansion, $6 million. Scarborough Draw, $4 million. Industrial Channel and Basin, $2 million. Mulberry Channel, $1.5 million. Replace CMP, $18 million. Inverted Roadways, $22.5 million. Air Park Loop 250, $6 million. I-20 Retention Basins, $5 million. Annual Operations and Maintenance for 10 years, $10 million. The fees come as the result of an agreement with Midland ISD after the passage of the district's $1.4 billion school bond. After it had passed in November 2023, it became apparent that roads and infrastructure projects were not included. This has forced the city of Midland to pay for the majority of these projects with money it says it doesn't have. Ahead of Tuesday's meeting, the Reporter-Telegram requested from the city answers to several questions about the process of funding MISD bond-related infrastructure projects, including about Assistant City Manager Jose Ortiz's participation on the district's bond planning committee that ultimately recommended the bond plans and package to school board trustees. The Midland Reporter-Telegram will share responses it receives in future coverage. As previously reported, drainage fees are going up by 145% across all three residential and six commercial tiers. The city believes accusations that these fees will overburden Midlanders are overplayed, as the amount that residents pay will increase from a minimum of $20.88 for residential Tier 1 annually to a maximum of $59.16 for residential Tier 3 annually. For businesses, the annual minimum increase ranges from $100.92 to $3,828 annually. Even with the drainage fee increase, the city still believes that the finalized amount won't be enough long-term. Despite this, another increase is not on the horizon anytime soon. Quote, drainage fees at the 2018 and 2026 levels are not sufficient to cover all needs, McClellan's staff wrote in the presentation. A blended funding source with drainage fees is required to accomplish long-term goals and needs. The City Council voted 6-1 to finalize the new drainage fees. Councilwoman-at-Large Robin Poole, who was absent from the previous City Council meeting on January 13th, was the dissenting vote. The increased fees will go into effect February 1st. Cogdale Learning Center gets new director. Sanchez to launch advisory group to help facility grow. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editor. Former County Commissioner Luis Sanchez is getting ready for a new role in public service, this time with Midland College. Sanchez has been tabbed as the new director of the Cogdale Learning Center, a satellite facility located in Midland's south side. The facility has been in operation since 1994 and was made possible after Bill Pace Cogdale donated two buildings to the City of Midland, which then sold them to Midland College for $1. The Bill Pace Cogdale Scholarship Program was established after its namesake's passing in 1997. In addition to educational programs, Cogdale Learning Center is home to the Business Economic Development Center, which provides business, credit, and home buying counseling, among other services. The Diesel Technology Center is also at the site. Sanchez is a graduate of Midland High School. He earned his associate degree in government from Midland College, a bachelor's in political science and Spanish from Texas Tech, and a master's in public administration leadership from UTPB. Sanchez has served on several nonprofit boards locally. Quote, education is in my blood and has always been a passion of mine, said Sanchez, who in the past worked as a Spanish teacher at Midland Freshman High School. Quote, I'm eager to reintroduce Cogdale to the community, end quote. Cogdale will continue to offer GED and ESL classes, as it has since its inception, but Sanchez said the creation of a community advisory committee is in the works so that the facility can grow to better meet Midlanders' educational needs, particularly those who live in South and East Midland. Cogdale already hosts the Mexican and Guatemalan consulates, and it might expand to include other countries so that Midland's immigrant populations can better handle matters back home, Sanchez said. Sanchez said he's already at home at Cogdale. quote, "I grew up in South Midland, and I continue to live in South Midland," he said. "It's more than just a great place to live. It's a critical part of the larger Midland community, and I'm excited for the opportunity to guide Cogdale and its efforts to improve education in Midland." Midland County logs warmest year on record. Area averaged 67.5 degrees in 2025, with temperatures in six of the 12 months much above average. The story was written by Dominic Cinetti. The final numbers are in, and Midland County, Texas, had an above-average 2025, including a record-breaking month that became the warmest on record. When it comes to monthly temperatures, it was a late summer month that finished as the hottest. Texas closed out 2025 as its fourth warmest year on record, a statistic that only begins to tell the story of a year defined by country-leading tornado activity, flooding disasters, and wide-ranging weather extremes nationwide. Midland County. According to the National Centers for Environmental Information, Midland County had the warmest year on record with an average temperature of 67.5 degrees for the entire year of 2025. The warmest month was August at 84.6 degrees, and July was the only month in the year that topped out at near average 82.2 degrees. November was the warmest on record ever at 60.6 degrees, and the only month to come in below average was January at 40.2 degrees. Six of the 12 months were much above average: March, 61.4, April, 70.2, August, 84.6, September, 78.4, October, 71.4, and December, 52.5. And only 3 months were above average: February, 50.2, May, 75.1, and June, 82.7. Five of the 12 months of the year were above average, and four of the 12 months were near average. The only time Midland County came in below average was January at 22.9 degrees. The 5 months above average were April, 54.5, June, 74.3, July, 78.7, September, 69.3, November, 44.6. Texas. For Texas, it was the fourth warmest year ever recorded for the state, with the average temperature across 2025 at 67.7 degrees, which was 3.1 degrees above average. 2024 was the warmest year on record, with an average temperature of 68.4 degrees. The summer was 1.2 degrees above average at 81.2 degrees. The first 3 months of 2025, January, February, and March, were 2.1 degrees above average at 52.5 degrees. The final 3 months of the year, October, November, and December, were 6.6 degrees above average at 62.5 degrees. Precipitation-wise, Texas saw slightly more rain than average, finishing the year with 27.41 inches of precipitation compared to the statewide average of 27.02 inches. Tornadoes. In terms of the number of tornadoes in the state, Texas led the country with 162 tornado reports, according to AccuWeather. That being said, while Texas had a high volume of tornadoes, none were particularly strong or destructive. The strongest tornado of the year for the state was an EF3 that struck outside of Seymour, Texas, on April 29th, causing no injuries or fatalities. In fact, there were no fatalities due to tornadoes across Texas in 2025. Flooding. The most devastating weather event for Texas and the country occurred in southern Texas from July 4th into July 5th. During the morning of July 4th, 6.5 inches of rain fell in just 3 hours. This caused a massive flash flood in which the Guadalupe River rose rapidly, more than 26 feet in 45 minutes, cresting at 37.52 feet by around 5 a.m., a record high. The flooding killed at least 135 people, including 117 fatalities in Kerr County. Winter weather. Unusual parts of Texas also received snow in 2025. As part of a blizzard that hit the south in January of 2025, 4.5 inches of snow fell in Beaumont and Port Arthur. Another snowstorm brought multiple rounds of measurable snow within a 24-hour period, mainly along and north of the I-20 corridor in early January. Totals exceeded 6 inches along the Red River, including isolated amounts of 9 to 11 inches in Cook and Grayson counties. United States. A number of weather events affected the country as a whole, ranging from some of the most damaging wildfires in history to tornadoes and flooding. There was positive news in the tropics for the first time in a decade. For the first time since 2015, no hurricanes made landfall in the United States or its territories during 2025. Not everywhere in the Atlantic avoided impacts, however, as Jamaica was struck by what may have been the strongest landfalling Atlantic hurricane in history. Tornadoes. The preliminary U.S. tornado count for 2025 was 1,559, ranking as the fifth highest on record, and 127% of the 30-year 1991 to 2020 average. The year included several notable extremes, including 300 preliminary tornado reports in March, a new monthly record, more than 3 times the average. In addition to the Enderlin EF5 tornado, 5 EF4 tornadoes occurred in Arkansas, Louisiana, Illinois, and Kentucky. The Enderlin North Dakota tornado was the first verified EF5 since 2013. Wildfires. Across the country, there were more wildfires than average, but the number of acres burned from said wildfires was 28% below average. The number of wildfires in 2025 was approximately 105% of the 20-year, from 2001 to 2020, average, with more than 72,000 wildfires reported. The total number of acres burned from these wildfires, 5.0 million acres, was 72% of the 20-year average of nearly 7 million acres. That being said, the wildfires that did take place were some of the most destructive in California history. Fueled by Santa Ana winds gusting up to 90 miles per hour and dry conditions, the Eaton Fire burned 14,000 acres, while the Palisades Fire burned more than 23,000 acres and was the most destructive wildfire on record for Los Angeles. Together, these fires damaged or destroyed over 18,000 structures during January and were responsible for 31 fatalities. Global. Earth's global surface temperature in 2025 was slightly warmer than 2023, but within the margin of error for 2 years are effectively tied, according to an analysis by NASA scientists. Since record-keeping began in 1880, the hottest year on record remains 2024. Global temperatures in 2025 were cooler than 2024, with average temperature of 2.14 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.19 degrees Celsius above the 1951 to 1980 average. Three Republicans vie for county judge as primary nears. The story was written by B.K. Richter. With the March primary election steadily approaching, Midland County voters will decide among three local candidates vying for the elected position of county judge. The three Republican candidates include incumbent Terry Johnson, Jay Marquez, and Karen Wood. Johnson has held his position since 2018. Projects under Johnson's leadership have included the Judge David M. Kobos Midland County Courthouse Annex and New County Jail. The 55,000-square-foot facility will house offices and courtrooms for Midland County's Justice of the Peace judges, four constables, the Warrants Division, as well as the Medical Examiner. The annex is scheduled to open for business in September 2026. Additionally, the construction of a new county jail is also underway and is estimated to be finished in between 1 and 2 years. Marquez describes himself as a strong conservative Republican who supports President Donald Trump's vision for America. A longtime Midland resident, he said he began delivering groceries for his neighbors using his brother's bicycle. He has worked at First Grocery Store, his automobile detailing business, as a landman, and as an oil and gas executive. Hood said that she began her career in public service at the Midland County Tax Office in 1999. In 2014, she was elected as the tax assessor-collector. Hood describes herself as a trusted conservative leader within the Midland community. She said she has been an active member of the Midland County Republican Women since 2009, serving as president four times and holding multiple board positions. The Midland County judge is a voting member of the Midland County Commissioners Court that works with other members of the court to approve the county budget and implement county government operations within the business of the county. Other duties that the elected position holds are: monitors legislative matters pertaining to county business at the state legislature, oversees county capital projects, including infrastructure and community-based projects, presides over beer and wine license hearings, as well as weddings, presides over a five-member commissioner's court, presides over probate court, where decisions regarding estates, guardianship, and mental illness are heard, proposes the county budget for each fiscal year, receives and canvasses elections, represents and serves on boards and committees on behalf of the county, serves as authorized signatory on contracts and agreements for the county, serves as the county's emergency management director for emergency preparedness and response within the county, serves in dignitary capacities for the county government, works closely with all departments to efficiently serve the public. There is no requirement that the candidate for county judge have a law degree or license in order to be in the elected position. However, the county judge is required to earn 16 continuing education credits annually related to their duties. Additionally, the county judge must retrieve and practice legislative updates and mandates within their responsibilities of the position. A live debate featuring the candidates for Midland County Judge will be streamed online via YouTube and Facebook starting at 7 p.m. Tuesday, February 10th on Basin PBS. Ahead of the debate, Residents can submit questions via the Basin PBS social media pages before and during the live debate. Limited studio seating is available for in-person viewing. No Democrats have filed to run for Midland County Judge this year. The winner of the Republican primary on March 3rd will effectively secure the position. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 29th. Gennaro Benavides Galindo, age 85, of Midland, passed away on Friday, January 23rd. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, January 29th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Lois Virginia Howell, born on May 1, 1939, in Rock Springs, Texas, passed away on January 25th at the age of 86. A public visitation will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Monday, February 2nd, from 5 to 8 p.m. A funeral service will be held at Ellis Funeral Home Chapel on Tuesday, February 2nd at 2 p.m., with a committal to immediately follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Life Tributes, Andrew Elvin Reed, 10-7-1945 to 11-25-2025. Andy Reed, Andrew Elvin, was called to heaven on November 25, 2025 in Katy, Texas. He was born October 7, 1945 in Jacksonville, Texas, to Jewel Elvin Reed and Eudoxia Dot Reed. Andy was preceded in death by his father, Jewel Elvin Reed, mother, Eudoxia Dot Reed, and sister, Martha Elizabeth Sue Reed. He is survived by his wife of 58 years, Jan Bostick Reed, of Katy, Texas, formerly Midland, Texas, his daughter, Marianne Reed Giles, and grandsons, Reed and Ryder, of Spring, Texas, his son, Andrew R. Rusty Reed, and wife, Michelle, and grandchildren, Fisher of College Station, Texas, Emma and Cole of Katy, Texas, and his son Robert T. Reed and wife Christy, and granddaughters Carter, Brooklyn, and Blake of Fulshear, Texas. A celebration of life will be Saturday, January 24th, 2026, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. at La Bodega, 2700 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. A graveside service is scheduled for Monday, January 26th, 2026, at 11 o'clock a.m. at Earl's Chapel Cemetery, 436 County Road, 3221, Jacksonville, Texas, 75766. In lieu of flowers, the family has established a memorial website honoring Andy Reed and the quiet, steadfast battle he fought as he lovingly supported his wife through Alzheimer's. We invite you to visit, share memories, and consider contributing to support Alzheimer's awareness and research in his honor. https://events.alz.org/fundraisers/Marianne Giles. Mary Caroline Barr Wills, 9-10-1944 to 1-8-2026. Mary Caroline Barr Wills passed away on Thursday, January 8, 2026, at the age of 81 at Helen Greathouse Manor, assisted living in Midland, Texas. Mary was born in Spring Hill, Louisiana on September 10, 1944, to Robert Everett Barr and Annie Louise Broom Barr. She is survived by two stepdaughters and spouses, Angie and Mark Walker of Midland, Texas, and Shay and Kevin Sanders of Midlothian, Texas. Six step-grandchildren and spouses, Martin and Katie Pfeiffer of Midland, Texas, Grayson and Cody Ware, Hayden and Jaylee Weaver of Burleson, Texas, Paxton Wills of Midlothian, Texas, Sydney Walker of Midland, Texas, and Jamie Walker of Lubbock, Texas. Six step great-grandsons, niece Jessamine Caroline Stidham of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, nephew and spouse Robert and Tracy Dean of Edgewood, Texas, great-niece Caroline Stidham and great-nephew Jackson Stidham of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. A celebration of life will be held later in Fredericksburg, Texas. A graveside service will be held later at Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens in San Angelo, Texas, with family. We ask that memorials be given in her memory to Helen Greathouse Manor, the Village at Manor Park, in Midland, Texas, Alzheimer's Association, West Texas Chapter, Home Hospice in Midland, Texas, or a charity of one's choice. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joe Philip Liberty, 8/7/1937 to 1/2/2026. Joe Philip Liberty died at home on January 2, 2026. He was born in Big Spring, Texas on August 7, 1937, and grew up living on the family's cotton farm near Ackerley, Texas. Joe is preceded in death by his father, Gerald Liberty, parents Jean and Elmer Dyer, and wife Nancy K. Liberty. Joe is survived by his sister, Linda K. Dyer, sister-in-law, Sarah K. Webb, and husband, Tom. Joe's two sons are Todd Liberty and wife Martha, Blake Liberty and wife Chris, and a niece, Carrie Kent. Joe has five grandchildren that he loved trying to keep track of: Beth Avery and husband Trevor, Rachel Liberty and husband Dustin Fairbrook, Chris Zeka and husband Hank, Jaden Liberty and Joseph Liberty. There is also Joe's great-nephew Jeff Webb and wife Lisa, great-niece Julie Kinlaw and husband Riley. The line continues so far with five great-grandchildren: Levi, Cameron, Lucy, Heather, and Luke. Four great-nieces: Nola, Caden, Audrey, Melissa, and four great-nephews: Matthew, Colby, Connor, and Thomas. A celebration of Joe's life will be held at First Methodist Church on Wednesday, January 21st, 2026, at 11 o'clock a.m. That evening, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m., the family will host a reception for family and friends to celebrate Joe at the Petroleum Club. Honorary pallbearers are Jim Walton, Clint Hurt, Dan Michael, Alan Jones, Joseph Liberty, and Jeff Webb. In lieu of flowers, please consider a memorial contribution to High Sky Children's Ranch, Midland Memorial Foundation, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Betty Jones Latham, 4/17/1936 to 12/27/2025. Betty passed away in her sleep December 27, 2025, at her home in Victoria, Texas. She was born Betty Jean Dobson to her parents Jesse Daniel Dobson, an oilfield worker, and Doris Kathleen Graves in Big Spring, Texas, April 17, 1936, and graduated from Midland High, class of 1954. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband of 55 years, Roland Eugene Jones, and husband of 3 years, George Edward Latham, brother Seymour Daniel Dobson, brother Bobby Dwayne Dobson, daughter Roberta Elaine Kilburn, and great-grandson Noah Lemond. She is survived by her brother James Earl Dobson, sons Richard Eugene Jones and Robert Earl Jones, grandchildren Richard Evan Jones, Eric Kilburn, Tiffany Kilburn Lemond, Rain Jones, and Hunter Jones. Betty decided to donate her body to medical research. There will be a graveside service once cremated remains are returned to family at Fort Sam Houston National Cemetery, San Antonio, Texas, where she will be laid to rest next to Jean. Bridget May Hayes. Bridget May Hayes passed away on January 1, 2026, at the age of 64. A memorial service will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Monday, January 26, 2026, at 10 o'clock a.m. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Kelly Jane Cottingham Morris. Kelly Jane Cottingham Morris, 65, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 14th, 2026, in Odessa, Texas. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. James Patillo, 9/10/1942 to 12/28/2025. It is with a heavy heart and great sadness we say goodbye to James L. Jim Patillo of Midland, Texas. He succumbed to a prolonged illness and passed away peacefully in Midland, Texas on December 28, 2025. Jim was born in San Angelo, Texas, September 10, 1942, to Rodney G. Tex Patillo and Mary Barnett Patillo. At Jim's request, there will not be a funeral or memorial service. In a private ceremony, family will scatter his ashes in a horse pasture. He will ride like the wind towards heaven. He is survived by his wife, Jane, his daughter, Paige Walters of Florida, her husband, Joseph, and grandchildren, Kate, Grace, Beck, and Claire. His son, Scott Patillo of Midland, his wife, Carla, and grandchildren, Jake and Madeline. He also leaves behind two great grandchildren, Luke and Layton, and his sister, Jan Holman of Alamogordo, New Mexico. He was a faithful man of God and will be greatly missed. This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 28th, 2026. Midland Health, Group to Relaunch Weight Loss Program. Obesity across America continues to be a public health crisis. About 40.3% of U.S. adults are classified as obese, according to recent CDC data. Midland Health's vision is to make Midland the healthiest community in Texas. Midland Health aims to achieve this vision by focusing on preventive care, holistic health, and addressing chronic diseases. In 2026, Midland Health is relaunching Way to Success. The Way to Success program is a multidisciplinary weight management program designed to help patients improve their overall health and to treat or reverse chronic issues such as cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and sleep apnea. The Way to Success program combines lifestyle medicine, medical management of obesity, and surgical options. A personalized plan for improving health will be guided by our team of highly experienced medical providers to help patients achieve their goals for improved health. A foundation in lifestyle medicine. At the heart of the program is lifestyle medicine, which emphasizes whole food, plant-based nutrition. Dr. Gadaraju, certified in lifestyle medicine, helps patients understand how proper nutrition can treat and often reverse chronic conditions such as obesity, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. Unlike restrictive, quote, fad, end quote, diets, this approach focuses on nutrient-dense, high-fiber plant foods that naturally help people feel full faster and reduce calories. Patients are guided on how to transition toward a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grains to improve overall health. Exercise and mental well-being. Weight management is as much about the mind as it is the body. The program includes on-staff psychologists who use cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, to help patients identify emotional triggers for eating and develop healthier coping strategies. This psychological support is critical for breaking the cycles of stress eating and building the confidence needed for permanent change. Exercise also plays a key role in a healthy lifestyle. By focusing on building muscle mass and improving cardiovascular health, exercise supports the metabolic shifts necessary for long-term weight maintenance. Exercise is important for physical and mental well-being, helping manage weight, reducing risks of heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and some cancers, while improving mood, sleep, energy levels, bone health, and cognitive function, ultimately leading to a longer, healthier life. Modern medication and surgical support. For many, biology and hormones can present significant barriers to weight loss. Way to Success integrates medication management to help regulate appetite and metabolism. Sunday Adkins, nurse practitioner, coordinates the patient's care for medical management of obesity, which uses foundational lifestyle changes of diet, exercise, and behavior with weight loss medications, all aimed at improving health and achieving sustainable weight loss. For patients requiring more intensive intervention, the program provides a pathway to bariatric surgery. Surgical options are paired with lifelong medical follow-up to ensure patients maintain their results safely. Our highly skilled bariatric surgeons, Dr. Van Heusen and Dr. Bassett, will advise patients while surgical operation would which surgical operation would be best suited for ideal patient outcomes. A community of success. Way to Success features support groups and ongoing education and provides a sense of community and accountability. These groups allow participants to share experiences, overcome challenges together, and celebrate milestones in a supportive environment. Join the program. Whether your goal is to reclaim your health through better nutrition or to lose a significant amount of weight, Way to Success provides the tools and professional guidance to make it happen. For more information or to schedule an initial consultation, residents can visit the Midland Health Community News Portal or contact Sunday Atkins, Nurse Practitioner and Program Coordinator, at 432-638-8081for more details. Sunday Atkins is the coordinator of the Way to Success program. Health. Experts wake up to sleep tracking limits. Atlanta. Your watch says you had 3 hours of deep sleep. Should you believe it? Millions of people rely on phone apps and wearable devices like rings, smartwatches, and sensors to monitor how well they're sleeping. But these trackers don't necessarily measure sleep directly. Instead, they infer states of slumber from signals like heart rate and movement, raising questions about how reliable the information is and how seriously it should be taken. The U.S. sleep tracking devices market generated about $5 billion in 2023 and is expected to double in revenue by 2030, according to market research firm Grand View Research. As the devices continue to gain popularity, experts say it is important to understand what they can and cannot tell you and how their data should be used. Whether it's an Apple Watch, a Fitbit, an Oura Ring, or one of the innumerable other competitors, health and fitness trackers largely take the same basic approach by recording the wearer's movements and heart rate while at rest, according to Daniel Forger, a University of Michigan math professor who researches the science behind sleep wearables. The algorithms used by major brands have become highly accurate for determining when someone is asleep, Forger said. The devices are also somewhat helpful for estimating sleep stages, though an in-lab study would be more precise, he said. Quote, if you really want to know definitively how much non-REM sleep you're having versus REM sleep, that's where the in-lab studies really excel, end quote, Forger said. Dr. Chantel Branson, a neurologist and professor at the Morehouse School of Medicine, said she frequently has patients showing up with sleep scores from fitness trackers in hand, sometimes fixated on granular details such as how much REM sleep they got on a certain night. Branson says those patients are taking the wrong approach. The devices help highlight trends over time, but should not be viewed as a definitive measure of one's sleep health, nor should any single night's data be seen as significant. Quote, we would have believed them with or without the device and worked on trying to figure out why they can't sleep, and that is what the wearables do not do, end quote, she said. Branson said she thinks people who check their sleep statistics every morning would be better served by spending their efforts on, quote, sleep hygiene, end quote, such as creating a relaxing bedtime routine, avoiding screens before bed, and making sure their sleep environment is comfortable. She advises those concerned about their sleep to consult a clinician before spending money on a wearable. Forger takes a more favorable view toward the devices, which he says help keep the overlooked importance of sleep front of mind. He recommends them even for people without significant sleep issues, saying they can offer insights that help users fine-tune their routines and feel more alert during the day. Quote, seeing if your biological clock is in sync is a huge benefit because even if you're giving yourself the right amount of time, if you're sleeping at the wrong times, the sleep won't be as efficient, end quote, Forger said. Better habits. Kate Stoy, an Atlanta-area middle school teacher, bought an Oura Ring last summer, having heard positive things from friends who used it as a fertility tracker. Quote, it's so accurate, end quote, she said. Stoy found the ring to be just as helpful with tracking her sleep. After noticing that the few nights she drank alcohol coincided with poor sleep quality, she decided to give up alcohol. Quote, I don't see much reason to drink if I know that it's going to affect how I feel, end quote, said Stoy, who always wears her device except when she is playing tennis or needs to charge it. Another trend she says she detected in the ring's data, the importance of not eating too late if she wants to get good rest. Quote, I always struggle with going to bed, and it's often because I eat late at night, end quote, Stoy said. Quote, I know that about myself, and it knows it too, end quote. Becoming a problem. My Baronetti, who works in advertising in New York City, used to wear an Oura ring constantly. She said it helped her develop good sleep habits and encouraged her to maintain a daily morning exercise regimen. But as a metric-driven person, she became, quote, obsessed, end quote, enough with her nightly sleep scores that it began to cause her anxiety, a modern condition that researchers have dubbed, quote, orthosomnia, end quote. Quote, I remember I would go to bed thinking about the score I was going to get in the morning, end quote, Baronecchi said. Baronecchi decided not to wear her ring on a beach vacation a few years ago, and when she returned home, she never put it back on. She said she has maintained the good habits the device pointed her toward, but no longer wants the stress of monitoring her nightly scores. Branson of the Morehouse School of Medicine said she's observed similar score-induced anxiety as a recurring issue for some patients, particularly those who set goals to achieve a certain amount of REM sleep or who shared their nightly scores with friends using the same device. Comparing sleep types and stages is ill-advised since individual needs vary by age, genetics, and other factors, she said. Future of wearables. Forger thinks the promise of wearables has been underestimated, with emerging research suggesting the devices could one day be designed to help detect infections before symptoms appear and to flag sleep pattern changes that may signal the onset of depression or an increased risk of relapse. Quote, the body is making these really interesting and really important decisions that we're not aware of to keep us healthy and active and alert at the right times of day, end quote, he said. Quote, if you have an infection, that rhythm very quickly starts to disappear because the body goes into overdrive to start fighting the infection. Those are the kind of things we can pick up on, end quote. The technology could be particularly useful in low-resource communities where wearables could help health issues to be identified more quickly and monitored remotely without requiring access to doctors or specialized clinics, according to Forger. What to know about breast self-care? New York, what does it mean to have breast self-awareness? It's a more general, flexible approach to breast cancer prevention that involves staying familiar with how your breasts look and feel. It goes along with other early detection measures like getting regular mammograms. Doctors suggest breast self-awareness as an alternative to self-exams, those monthly methodical checks for any changes while applying pressure or lying down. Two decades ago, the American Cancer Society stopped recommending self-exams for people with average breast cancer risk because there wasn't strong evidence they helped if people were taking other preventative measures like regular mammograms. And the monthly checks made some patients anxious about every change, especially those with dense or naturally lumpy breast tissue. Quote, let's say you bring 100 women into an auditorium and you teach them how to do it, and then they go home and do it. You don't find any more cancers than if all of those women had mammograms according to our guidance, end quote, said Dr. Arif Kamal, chief patient officer for the American Cancer Society. Over 300,000 U.S. women and about 2,600 men will be diagnosed with invasive breast cancer in 2026, according to the Cancer Society. While mammograms are critical, especially for finding early, otherwise undetectable cancers, it's important to notice breast changes between screenings or before you are old enough to qualify and get those checked by a doctor just in case. The point of breast self-awareness is to, quote, know what your breasts normally look and feel like, and if something changes and you have a new lump or a new thickening, you could bring it to a doctor's attention, end quote, said Dr. Shari Goldfarb with Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Unlike monthly self-exams, there's no set routine for breast self-awareness. Instead, it's a general practice that integrates into daily life. That could mean noticing a change in shape while putting on a sports bra to exercise or feeling pain when lying down for bed. Dr. Megan Schneiderman's patients have brought up shifts they saw when looking in the mirror. Sometimes their partner was the one who noticed. The point of this general awareness, quote, is to try to make things a little less scary for patients, end quote, said Schneiderman, who works at Mount Nittany Health in Pennsylvania. Other important changes to look out for besides lumps are an inverted nipple, nipple discharge, skin dimpling, changes in breast size, skin redness, or constant pain from a single area. If something feels off, call a doctor to get it checked out. Checking for changes can lead to anxiety over whether every new development could be cancerous. But experts say it's important to remember that it's better not to be caught off guard. Most lumps aren't cancer. They could be normal fluctuations in breast tissue or a benign cyst. But it's always a good idea to check just to be safe, especially if it persists or worsens, said Dr. Pinay Razavi, a breast radiologist with Johns Hopkins Medicine. It's also important to maintain a normal screening routine, since being breast self-aware isn't protective enough on its own. That means getting mammograms yearly or every other year starting at age 40 or 45, as recommended by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and the American Cancer Society.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 28th. Husband wants young family to uproot for a new job. Dear Abby, my husband and I are raising our 7-month-old daughter together, and we generally get along well. I love him very much, but he has a habit that worries me. He's constantly on the lookout for a new job. This isn't necessarily a bad thing, but every couple of months he says he's bored and wants to work somewhere else. These are decent-paying jobs, but they never pay much more than what he's earning now. They are also not always located in the same city or even the same state we live in. I don't oppose moving away or moving up, but I don't want to move clear across the country when the benefit won't significantly add to what we have now, and the relocation creates a burden with moving expenses. Recently, my father made an offhand comment during a conversation about a business that offers good pay, benefits, etc., nearly the same benefits and pay my husband is receiving now. It would require that we move out of state, and I'd have to search for a new job. My husband has been at his current job less than a year, and I have been at mine less than 6 months. We just signed a new lease on our apartment. He wants to break the lease and move. What can I do to convince him that this is not a strategic move for our family at this time? Signed, Stressed Out Wife and Mom. Dear Stressed Out, I don't recommend breaking your lease and moving at this point because it will damage your credit. I don't know what your husband's problem is, whether he has trouble getting along with his co-workers or attention deficit disorder, but things won't improve until you determine the cause. Neither of you has a solid job history. In a few short years, your daughter is going to be in preschool, and you do not want to constantly disrupt her education or socialization. Stay put until a move will be more financially beneficial. Dear Abby, an elderly couple moved in next door. They once mentioned that they believed mothballs would keep ants away. That's not all. Every time they open their garage door, we get blasted with the stench. It is so pungent, we must retreat inside our house, which is about 80 feet from their property. We can't open our windows, sit on our deck, or do yard work outside until their garage door comes down. I don't know how they stand it. How can we let them know it's affecting our quality of life without causing a permanent rift? Signed, Stunk Out in Pennsylvania. Dear Stunk Out, contact your local health department to report what you are enduring and to share your concerns. Mothballs are not supposed to be used in the manner you have described. If you live in an area with a homeowners association, it also may be able to help. However, if there isn't one, you may have to bite the bullet and ask the neighbors to close the garage door more quickly because the scent of mothballs is making you ill. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.